This is the PropTech VC Podcast. We give you unique insights into how innovative technologies are disrupting real estate. We interview top entrepreneurs, investors, and knowledgeable experts to share the inside scoop in this fast-moving industry. It's hosted by leading PropTech VC, Zane Jaffer. Let's dive into today's content.
Kyle, what advice do you have to founders who are having a hard time breaking through? This is especially the case with ethnic minority founders and founders who aren't as well connected, don't know how to get through customer discovery, and are constantly, they can't get a meeting. They're shut down a lot and they're told no. Any advice or tips for these guys?
So that was, frankly, that was a lot of my early story. I mean, people were very much not willing to help me because I was not from the industry. I was a total outsider. And whenever I told someone that I turned down a job in the industry, then that was like automatic red flag. Well, then I really don't like you. So the amount of times I got turned down for a meeting or got turned down for a 10-minute phone call or got told 5 minutes within a phone call, hey, like this isn't going to be worth our time anymore, was numerous. In my view, you have to get really creative. You have to be, you kind of have to lead someone down the path towards helping you. So if that's being really efficient and following up, I think that was a huge thing that I did. I mean, I like borderline spam people, frankly, because I had to. I didn't have any other choice. I didn't have any other resources. I had books, I had Google, and I had people. And that was it. So following up and being really, really good about that. And then what else I think I did well was I took a super personal approach to the people that wanted to invest time. So handwritten thank you notes, really, really kind emails. I would mail things to people's houses. I wanted these people to know that I cared. And it didn't cost anything. It was a stamp. But it was just a personal touch that was like, hey, you're part of, oh, yeah. You're part of this journey with me, and you're kind of on like on Team Kyle, if that makes sense, in terms of helping me figure it out. And it was just, I mean, I hate to say that simple, but it was this personal idea of just trying to connect with that person, build a relationship with them. And then ultimately, you know, I remember there was one relationship where this guy knew a ton of people. So he'd kind of opened kind of a small crack in the door to a couple of his contacts. And then 6-8 months down the road, he was like, oh, like, you've made it this far. Oh, you need to meet this person and this person and this person and this person. And that just opened up the world in terms of opportunity for me. And it took a lot of time. I mean, you have to be incredibly patient.
Were you selective and picky with the people you decided to double down on, or did you do it with anyone who gave you time? So you have to, because otherwise you will boil the ocean very quickly with the number of people that you can talk to. So this is interesting because it's something I think about too, is who are some important people you want to stay connected to and invest in? And how did you do that? Did you literally just have a post-it note, or did you use a CRM tool, or what?
Yeah, I actually still to this day have a running Excel spreadsheet of all of my meetings going back to June of 2016.
Fantastic. Kyle, you know, when I started a company in 2011, I also didn't have many tools and technologies, and the world was very different back then. You had to work very hard to get an introduction. You had to send emails cold. You sometimes had to work really hard just to get someone's phone number and cold call them, which people don't do as much today. And I don't like getting cold called, but, you know, I did that, right? Today, I don't think there's really any excuse not to be personal. It's so easy to find contact information. There's so many third-party data engines out there that can get you really detailed contact information that's accurate. You've got LinkedIn, you've got email automation tools. You can use scrapers to personalize emails. There isn't really an excuse, and I think it's a double-edged sword, because if someone doesn't put in the effort and it looks like they're spamming you, it's an instant no-no. And there's a fine line between a spam mass email versus something personalized. And it doesn't take as much effort as it used to take. You had to do handwritten notes. And I think that's wonderful. And I did that too, by the way. I'll tell you a bit in a minute, I went beyond that as well. But you know, advice to entrepreneurs, use technology and be, you know, you're going to have the opposite reaction. Someone might close the door on you permanently if you just come across as a spammer.
Totally. Yeah. All of my emails, in my view, they had the same general flavor, but everything was personalized. If I knew something about someone's family or someone about a friend or a colleague or something, I mean, it was going in there.
So that anecdote, Rani, I started a mobile advertising company, and the target was game developers. And there were two ways I'd reach game developers that was quite unique. First, I would play their damn game. I'd play their game inside out, and I'd try to get on the top 10 leaderboard. Now, I guess I was just procrastinating and playing games rather than running a startup. But I really wanted to understand the ins and outs. And secondly, I'd write them long emails with screenshots and feedback. And then I'd also say, by the way, I think there's opportunity for you to make money through ads, and you should use our advertising platform. The other thing I did was we found this wonderful lady somewhere who was knitting clothing items and pillows. And we decided to create these pillows that like were square pillows that look like an app, and it would be their logo on it. And so any customers we wanted to reach out to, or any customers we already had, we would routinely send them a pillow with a handwritten note saying, we made this for you, and we'd keep two. And we'd say, one is in our office because we really want to work with you. And the other one is for you guys to keep and do whatever you want. And people would tweet it, and people would contact us, and the CEO would contact us. Jesus, I just wanted to get through to the monetization manager so that they would show ads. Instead, the CEO is loving it. It's a cultural thing, and they want more. And then another time I painted my, this was not scalable, but my dream was to sign up a Rovio Angry Birds as a customer. And we painted our wall, and we made a big thing out of it. We created a bunch of viral ads. We were like, we really want you as a customer so much that we even painted our wall with your, you know, your background. Now, honestly, we were way too early to work with them. We burned too many bridges at the beginning. We hadn't refined our pitch. My advice would be for startups is you can go with the heavyweights potentially, but I think it's much better to go with a niche, smaller customers. Test your pitch out with them. This is not just for customers, but with investors too. Test your pitch out on customers that are smaller, refine it. So when you go to bigger customers, A, you hopefully know what you're talking about. And B, you know, you've maybe got people ready for a pilot who are smaller, then you can go to the bigger guy later.
It's funny you actually mentioned that. That's a lot of what our current still go-to-market strategy is. I mean, we go to market with smaller and medium-sized customers. Often say, yes, there's a ton of the larger potential customers that we could go after, and they're great and they've been helpful and we know a lot of them. But in terms of actually going after them from a sales perspective, that's not been the focus. I want to own the smaller square footage guys. I want to go to market and win the smaller contracts so that we refine our product so that when we go to that bigger customer and we say, hey, we've got this collection of these smaller users that are loving and enjoying Dotted every single day, that pitch just becomes that much stronger.
Yeah. Now, in a SaaS-based business, how do you define your ICP, your ideal customer profile? How did you think about segmenting your market? Did you go for a broad solution, or did you go for a very point solution that targets a specific customer? How do you do that versus balancing your bigger vision? Kyle, I know you want to take over the world. How do you balance that baby steps to, you know, global domination?
Yeah, totally. Global domination happening in just a few years. But in the interim, we really had to understand who our customer was, because in our world, we actually have a different, sometimes in payer than an end user. And so the customer base is a little bit segmented even within its own, within the same firm. You could have a property owner or someone who owns a portfolio of assets that really is not going to be necessarily your end technology user. And then they have to get that person in their organization who's probably lower middle level, who's really more the owner of the technology, who's really the main kind of user, if you want to say that, to really jump on board. So we had to understand who the payer was first and what product features the payer needed to see for them to sign on the dotted line. That's where the name comes from. And then we also had to get the right functionality so that the end user would ultimately be able to expedite their leasing process and their daily workflow better than before. So it's really a two-pronged approach. Inside of what I just mentioned around the smaller and more middle market customers, that was actually much easier, because when you get to institutional firms that have buildings in all these markets and all these people, everyone just does it a little bit differently. And so it's harder to peg like who that ICP was. In a smaller group that maybe owns, you know, just 10 assets in a certain metropolitan area, that became really easy because their process was a lot more repeatable. And so we really honed in on them first, and we got down to the nitty gritty on what do you need to use it? How can we make your world better every single day? And then we worked up from there into the, frankly, larger customers. If I even look at our customer base, we started with an initial customer that was under 1 million square feet on our platform on purpose. We loved that they were our first customer. They weren't a big name, they weren't a huge user, but they were in Dotted every single day from 8 to 5. And it taught us so much about the product because they actually took the time to actually be in there. If I'd started with a 10 million or a 25 million or a 50 million square foot owner, that experience would have been totally different for us from the beginning. And that would have yielded different results in terms of the customer feedback that I don't think would have propelled our product where it is today.